So I love the questions Jesus asked. I love looking into them. When we were actually crafting the sermon series and it came up in staff meeting, I remember secretly sitting there going, oh, I hope I get this question because I really want this question. Andy didn't choose this one. Krista didn't. And so I was really thrilled that I get to share on this particular question this morning, which I'll get to in a minute. But it's important to look at the questions Jesus asked because he asked a lot of them. In the New Testament, Jesus asked 307 questions, not including the parables. You can go back and do your research, find out if I'm right. And the Gospels are filled. They're filled with stories. They're filled with parables, with actions, with commandments, with declarations, with miracles from the dramatic life of Jesus. But they're also filled with questions. And Jesus had, John Deere, I've been reading a few books on the questions of Jesus, and John Deere in one of his books says Jesus had a question for everyone he met, for every encounter, for every experience, and for every potential disciple. So we need to dig into those questions. Jesus would have used questions to unlock mysteries, and he would have used questions to draw people out to change them. And when used right, questions can be like a spade in a garden digging for buried treasure, or questions can be used like a flashlight that shines light on where we should go. And I heard a quote from a speaker about a year ago, and he said, you know, when you read the Bible, don't just read the Bible. Let the Bible read you. And that's my prayer this morning, that we wouldn't just, you know, the story's familiar for a lot of us. A lot of Jesus' questions are familiar, that we wouldn't just check out and go, I got that, I know that story. But let's let the Holy Spirit reveal new mysteries to us today and new mysteries in our lives as we seek him. And so the reason, I'll get to the question in a moment because I know you're all on pins and needles, what question am I doing? But the reason that I wanted to do this particular question, maybe it's already up there. Yes, it is. Who are you looking for? The reason I wanted to do this question is that I have related to this story. I've just felt like I've responded in a lot of ways to potential endings the way Mary did. I found myself reacting like her. Even started about a year ago, and I remember being in Montreal this summer, and I'm pretty sure there was a message on this. I don't know if that was where I was, but I heard a message this summer on this as well. And so, like Mary, I was facing a potential ending, and I'm going to just take you back for a moment. When I was 18, I went to Germany, and I've shared this a little bit with some of you, but I really wanted to be around a group of followers who loved Jesus. I knew that I needed to grow in that way when I was 18, and that would change my life, and I think what I didn't realize what would happen there, I went to Germany for 6 months, and my faith did grow, and it deepened, and I really felt the invitation from Jesus to give my whole life to him, and it totally changed my life. And I'm where I am today because of that chapter. That certainly had a part in it. But I didn't anticipate what it would be like to get as close to the people that I did, so not only was I deepening, my faith was growing, but I was able to unpackage it with students that I was getting so close to. And that 6 months didn't last, and it came to an end. And I remember, so this is like, sorry, youth, but this is in 1990, so you won't relate here, but there was one landline phone for 80 students. And the phone rang, and it was for me, so somebody got me. And it was my mom, and she was asking me, like, you know, how are you doing? And I could hardly talk. I said, Mom, it's like a funeral. Like, I'm not doing good at all. And I couldn't believe my reaction. I just was like, this is bizarre that I'm this sad. But it was like a funeral to me. And I said that to my mom. And it was because I was facing an ending. I knew I would see some of these people again, but it wouldn't be in this context. It wouldn't be with this same shared experience. I knew it was going to be different. And I was sad. And we see Mary in John chapter 20. We see Mary facing a potential ending. And we see her response. And just to recap some of the story, so before, we're going to start on verse 11, but before that, Jesus would have died on the Friday. Mary would have been there. She would have been there at the cross. She would have seen Jesus die. The Saturday morning, she wouldn't have been able to go visit the tomb. But the Sunday, we read, while it was still dark, she set out to the tomb. And so a lot of us know this story. She came to the tomb. The stone was rolled away. And then she ran to go tell the disciples. She told Peter and she told the disciple who Jesus loved. It was some say it was John. We don't know for sure. She ran and told those two disciples. And then what we see next is sort of comical. It's a race. It's a race to the tomb. So Peter runs and the other disciple runs. The other disciple gets there first and he stops at the door, doesn't go in. Peter gets there second, runs in. And I guess maybe he inspired the other disciple to get in. But the other disciple sees the grave clothes. So if you can imagine, that would have been at the head and at the feet, showing that, Jesus was resurrected. There's something supernatural that happened. And it says he saw and believed. And then we see the disciples go back to their homes. And I'm going to take us now to verse 11. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. So already we see a stark contrast here with the disciples' response and with Mary. And I've felt this past year like Mary. And sort of wishing I could be like Peter and like the disciple Jesus loved, and sort of asking God, why can't I just do that? Why can't I just run back? I'm not sure, but I've found myself like Mary. Weeping in the Greek, in this context, refers to wailing loudly, and the emphasis is actually on the volume. So Mary was not softly crying. She was weeping loudly. And we see Mary here lingering. It's easy to sort of rush on to the next verse, but there's a pause here. That Mary stood full of sadness and full of grief. Her supposed circumstances was terrible. This was awful for her. And some of us, we've mentioned this morning, Andy mentioned the news of Nathan. It hasn't been an easy season for us as a congregation. And so it doesn't take long for us, even corporately this morning, to imagine this sort of reason to pause, reason to linger, reason to wait, to weep, some of us loudly. But when we look at what happens next, we realize the lingering and the pausing and the waiting was about to change Mary forever, because she was about to have an encounter that would have changed her life in remarkable ways. So when we read on, we read, as she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb. And verse 12 says, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. And they said to her, woman, why are you weeping? And she said to them, they've taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they've laid him. And so we already see the beginning of an encounter that would have changed Mary's life. She's already encountering a supernatural experience. But Mary's just doing what she's done for years. She's following Jesus. She's following him even when it looks terrible. She follows. Even when he's in a tomb, she follows. And verse 14 says, when Mary had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but did not know that it was Jesus. And so I've found in the past it's easy for me to overlook this sentence. It's easy to overlook actually what's happening, because Mary sees Jesus but doesn't recognize him. And I think in the past I've kind of looked at that verse and go, like, there's no way. How could she not recognize him? She spent so much time with him. She would have been so close with him. And there's a few theories out there. Like, one is that because Jesus appeared to a few of his followers right after his resurrection, and they also didn't recognize him at first. So maybe his resurrected body, like, one theory is maybe it was so transformed and different in such a unique way that she didn't recognize him at first. Another probability is that maybe from where Mary was standing in the tomb, remember it was dark when she set out, and some time has passed already because she's gotten the disciples and they had that exchange between them, and Jesus, we can imagine standing at the doorway of the tomb and peering in. Maybe he was silhouetted by the morning light and she couldn't see him. We don't know, but she didn't see him. And when we look deeper in that, we could imagine that maybe Mary, in her grief, being so immersed in what she imagined to be the situation that Jesus was gone, she couldn't see Jesus. She's in the tomb, and she's in the darkness. And for a lot of us this morning, it doesn't take long to remember our tombs, you know, to remember our darkness, to remember the pain we're walking through. As a congregation, even this week, there's been harder times for us. The sentencing and the loss of Suhail and all that means for us at WCV, it has not been easy. And maybe like Mary, Jesus is here and we don't see him all the time. We look at verse 15. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" So Jesus using the term woman, it would have been a term of respect, which is important in this day and age to understand that. He would have been using a term of respect. And so Jesus was saying, "Why are you weeping loudly?" Again, it's the same verb there. I wonder if Jesus was saying, if you knew it was me, you wouldn't have reason to be this sad. If you were aware of me right now. And then Jesus says, "Whom are you looking for?" To look in the Greek here means to seek, means to desire, it means to want. So Jesus is saying to Mary, "Who do you want? Who do you desire?" And Jesus is taking Mary to a place. He started off in John asking the disciples, "What do you want?" But then towards the end of John, in John 20, he's saying, "Who do you want?" Because he knows things aren't gonna be what we want. We're looking for someone. That's what we're doing in life. We're looking for someone. And Jesus knows this. And he's asking Mary, "Who do you want?" And I love what I found out in Logos here. Again, another perk of being married to Mike. You have Logos on your laptop. It's awesome. Don't get any ideas. He's taken. But we we read here that it's the process of searching on the next slide. It's a process of searching. And I love that because to me it shows movement. Like Mary was in the process of searching and she's searching for Jesus. And he's asking her, "Who do you want?" And I love that he's asking her this in her grief because it shows that Jesus isn't concerned. Like Mary is there in her sadness and her confusion. Jesus is... There's been angels that have appeared, and then Jesus has appeared, and then he's spoken, and she's still not cluing in that it's Jesus. But that doesn't disqualify her. Jesus is saying, "Who are you looking for?" And he's inviting Mary. You're not disqualified, Mary. And he's saying that to us. He's saying that to me. This is an invitation to move out of being disqualified into an invitation of transformation. He's inviting Mary to more. And that encouragement, like, it's hit me so profoundly this week as I was preparing for this, because it doesn't matter about where Mary's at. So then maybe it doesn't matter where I'm at. Because if Jesus is meeting Mary in her grief, maybe he can meet me in mine. And so Jesus isn't stopping with where Mary is currently and with where she's been in her past. He's concerned where her heart is pointing in this question. And he's not overly concerned with where she's been or where she is, and he's interested in Mary. And being interested in Mary allows me to believe he's interested in me. It allows me to believe he's interested in WCV. And he draws Mary out just like he can draw me out, just like he can draw us out to articulate our hopes and our dreams. Because that's what he's asking Mary that morning. He's saying, what do you hope for, Mary? Who do you want? And he's inviting her to articulate her hopes and her dreams. And I don't know about you. I don't know if you can actually remember the last time that somebody has invited you to articulate a hope and a dream. Just give you a moment to actually ask yourself that. I think for myself, that is the beauty I feel that we can be for each other, that as we learn to be more like Jesus, we can begin to ask questions like Jesus. We can begin to use questions in the way Jesus used them. And we can invite each other as a community, as individuals, to articulate our hopes and our dreams. And that's what Jesus is doing for Mary. So we read on, supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away. And so Mary, even again, she's speaking, Jesus has spoken, he's appeared, and she's still thinking he's someone else. She's thinking he's the gardener. And then here comes, I feel, one of the most tender passages in Scripture. Verse 16, when Jesus says to her, Miriam. And she turned, and turn again, it's real fun, really interesting to understand. It's a twist, it's to turn toward, but it also means an inner conversion. So it implies an inner conversion. So Mary is experiencing an inner conversion. She turns to him and says in Hebrew, Rabbayunai, which means teacher. Jesus said to her, Miriam. She turned and said to him in Hebrew, Rabbayuni, which means teacher. And this would have been an encounter that Mary would have never forgotten. This would have been an experience that would have been unforgettable. Mary, I can imagine, would have repeated this encounter to the disciples, which she did. We see a few verses later. But she would have repeated it, I imagine, to anyone she would have met until the day she died. Miriam. Rabbayuni. It's a call and a response. And we notice here that Mary didn't recognize his voice at first. So perhaps this is a story of hope for us this morning, because there's so many times we don't recognize his voice. She didn't know Jesus until he spoke her name. And when Jesus speaks her name, if we can imagine the history Mary would have had with Jesus, this would have been the voice that would have called Mary into wholeness when he expelled demons from her. This would have been a voice that would have shared a joke with her. This would have been a voice she would have recognized from sharing a meal with him. This would have been the voice as they walked along the road that would have spoken to her. It would have been the voice that spoke value and worth to Mary in an age where women were discredited. Their testimony didn't matter. That's why it's actually left out further on in the New Testament. You don't even hear about Mary encountering Jesus, because I don't know if Paul could have grasped that that would have been a credible witness. She would have heard value and worth from this voice. And this is the voice that called to her. And Jesus knew that Mary needed to hear her voice. He knew that morning she needed to hear her voice. And And it wasn't enough to speak to her. It wasn't enough to be there. She needed to hear her voice. And we see as we read further on in this gospel, in John 20, a few verses later, Jesus appears. Yet Mary tries to hold on to Jesus, and Jesus says, don't hold on to me, but actually go to the disciples and tell them everything you've seen and heard. So Mary does that, and we see a few days later, I don't know exactly when, but Jesus also appears. And he speaks to them, and he says, peace be with you. And then he breathes on them and says, receive the Holy Spirit. And he knew they needed that. And then a few verses later, it says a week later, he knew that Thomas needed more. Thomas needed the invitation to actually touch his wounds. And Jesus knew that. He knew he needed more. And then it goes on to say, John writes how Jesus did many more miraculous signs, and they're not written down, but he knew they needed that. Just like he knew that Mary needed her name to be spoken, Miriam. And so the good news is that Jesus looked for Mary. He was there for Mary in her darkness. He stayed. He invited her into a new chapter. And to wrap up my story in Germany, I had a new chapter. I came back. I was invited into many more experiences that were faith growing. They were not the same experiences, but they were beautiful experiences. There were mission trips that I went on. One actually was with Ben and Deb when they were just dating. Woohoo! I saw that romance happen. And those are one of the experiences though that Jesus was calling me and he was inviting me to a deeper walk with him. And then in 96 actually I started coming to Winnipeg Center Vineyard, and that was another beautiful invitation, where a place where this has been for me, where my faith has grown that I don't know if it would have in another context. And then of course I met that guy, and that changed my life, and then we were able to raise our family in this community. And as we know, this year it hasn't always been easy, right? There's been hard times, there's been grief, and times where I was like, I didn't know being part of a community, nobody told me this. You know, there's been those times. And that's why I relate so deeply with Mary. But that's okay, because he's there. And he's meeting me, and he knows what I need in this season. And like Mary, when there's a potential loss, when there's an experience, somebody said to me the other day, they actually gave me a text and said, I'm sad because this community isn't ever going to be what it was. Right? It's not. It's not going to be. It's not going to be what it was. But my experience in Germany, it was not the same when I came back. Those mission trips didn't equal that. They were different. They were different invitations. But it was a new chapter of growth and beauty that I'd never want to say no to. And I believe that for us. I really believe that for us. So let's take a few moments. We actually looked at this question on Thursday in youth, and Sarah led worship, and it was really, really tied in. You can come up, Sarah. And she led worship with this song, and I had a bit of a light bulb. I was like, oh, this really relates to what I feel the Lord is saying to us this morning. So let's just hold what Jesus could be saying to us, what the Holy Spirit could be saying to us this morning about who is it you're looking for. Why are you weeping? Maybe some of us this morning are hearing Jesus say our name individually, corporately. And others of us this morning, maybe we feel the delight of Mary. Just imagine, she was the first one. And we're feeling that delight this morning, and she got to go back and tell the disciples, and then that would have spilled out into the world. And we feel that this morning. Let's hold all these, whatever the Lord's speaking to us this morning, and just feel free to engage in this song or to take some space just for yourself, and we'll let the Lord speak.
There's no need to cover what I already see. You've got your reasons, but I hold your peace. You've been on lockdown, but I hold the key. 'Cause I loved before. And I
mean that all of our pain will become part of our story. That you're giving us hope this morning. You are the God of hope. You're the God of peace. You're inviting us to more. You're meeting us.
Noticing our response in a couple places in Jody's message, and I prayerfully put to you that perhaps the Lord wants to do a little bit more on a couple of points with us this morning before we try to terminate what we're doing right now. One is at the point of the question that was the title, which is who are you looking for? What a marvelous question. And Jody did an amazing job of just kind of like saying that to us. And so I know she already had a rest on this, but I think the Lord wants to do a little more. I think He, you know, in the same way that Sarah was singing, you know, He did this for us. He wants to come close. And He's really curious. Because, you know, in the midst of church and structure and services and songs and sermons, you know, we're looking for something in all of that. And I think for many of us, it is someone. It really is someone. And some of us have had a taste of that someone. We know a little bit like, and in the midst of all, we can lose Him. We can sometimes like, I don't know, you know, we're hopeful that we'll find Him, but we sometimes get distracted by all kinds of things, jobs, worries, church structure, how we're going to work things out. We do want Him, and so I think that I think He wants to do a little bit more with that. So I'll take you a few of these, I think, and we'll just pause and just imagine that He is here. There He is, right? As He appears in Revelation, the feet of burnished bronze, a tongue that's like swords, and His eyes are fire, and in a voice that sounds like many rushing waters, He says these five words: who is it that you are looking for? Because as Jody was saying, sometimes it seems like He's not there, but He may very well be right there. Who is it that you're looking for? And when we see Him, sometimes we fall on the floor as though dead. Just like in the passage. But we know who it is that we're looking for. And so in this moment of imagining His very presence, I want to just invite you to respond to Him. And if it's time to make a pact with Him, make a pact with Him, make a deal with Him. If it's time to be mad at him, be mad at him, but respond to his question. And it's time to worship him, worship him. Who is it that you're looking for? If you brought a device with you, I know some of us have these things, I'd like you to do a favor for me right now. iPhone has an app called Reminders. I'd like you to set up a reminder that he's asking you this question. So if we're comfortable with it, take out your phone. Let's see how many phones do we have here today. You can just do it to humor me now. You can always erase it as soon as I'm done. Just to humor me now. I don't want this to leave you, and I want you to remember this question. It may have resonated for you now, or it may resonate with you a year from now. And so I'm just going to have a chance, give the Lord a chance to speak it again. You can open your reminders. At the bottom of it, there's a plus, and I just want you to write out the question. And I believe it's who are you looking for. Now, the Lord might modify it for you right now, but if that's the question that you want to be reminded of, let me encourage you to type it out right in your reminders. Who are you looking for? And then, if you know how to do it, you can click on the little I, and it'll say, remind me on a day, and then it'll say, repeat, and you can have it repeat as often as you want. I have many reminders that repeat every day. Let me challenge you to have this repeat every day this week. Who are you looking for? You could have it set to repeat that anytime you like. Who are you looking for? So that throughout your week, you'll be asked this question. Who are you looking for? 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 Because he wants to know. He does want to know. He wants to know who you're looking for. And sometimes by asking the question, it reorients our compass again. And we say, who am I looking for? Because sometimes I give up looking for him because I think he's dead. But he's alive, and he's sitting in the sunlight, and I just can't see him because the situation is so blinding. But he really is right there. So, can we find him together? Can we look for him and maybe find him when others might miss him? Because one of the reasons so many fall away is because he does make himself a little tricky to find at times. But that's his cat and mouse game that he loves to play with us, because he wants disciples who are looking for him. Who are you looking for? It's a glorious question that only he can ask that way.
And as we hold that question, I invite us all to come and take communion and to remember that Jesus invites us to hope. He invites us to life. He died for our darkness. He died for all of it. And let's come and remember him. He said, do this in remembrance of me. He forgives us this morning. He offers us a new chapter. He asks us to come and articulate our hopes and our dreams. So, Lord, make us people that want you. Make us like Mary, that we won't give up, that we refuse to leave until we find you. Make us like Mary. Help us to find you this morning. Help us to find you in this season, Lord. And as we take communion today, we remember you, Jesus. We remember that you've died for us, that your blood was shed and your body broken, and you are calling us to new life. We get new life with you. So just invite anyone to just come up as you're able.